Good morning. Some of you must be pretty well rested to sing like that. Everybody singing out, that's good. Glad to have Brother Nick back. Brother Tom has done a good job. We're getting our money's worth out of Brother Tom, aren't we? He's very talented. We're glad Brother Tom always has a good class. I invite everyone to come study from the book of 1 Kings. The Bible teaches whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. Romans 15 and 4. So it's for our benefit, it's for our learning. This morning, I would ask you to turn to Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 11. And we have four verses. I usually don't commit myself to this, but I'm going to try and will, with God's grace, succeed in talking about these four verses. Each one of these verses describes a generation of people. And I would argue that we have all four of these generations in our world today, and especially in the United States of America. We use the word generation. People talk about the older generation, right? The younger generation. Doing a little bit of research, of course, we have those that actually were living and fought during World War II, and those that went through the Depression, that is often called the greatest generation. I have a book in my study, and that's what it's called, the greatest generation. Then my generation, because after the war, a lot of babies were born, is called the baby boomers, the baby boomer generation. And you have a series of generations then. The Bible doesn't mention specific other than these. And, of course, we have generations listed in the Old Testament, like in Genesis chapter 5. You have genealogy. We have these different generations, like the millennials, like the... Now they're talking about the Z. There's one called the X generation. Maybe some of you that are in these, you are acquainted with them. But the Bible here in Proverbs gives us four generations. And it amazes me, I hope it amazes you, that we have this wisdom in the Bible that is just as true this morning as what it was true in the days of Solomon. Actually, Proverbs chapter 30, of course, these would be acknowledged as in the days of Solomon, but it talks about the words of Agur, the son of Jacob. I do not personally believe that that was Solomon. We have actually three writers of the book of Proverbs, but most of them are from Solomon. In this first generation, in Proverbs 30 and 11, and if you did not bring a Bible, there's probably one in the pew close by. There is a generation that curseth their father and doth not bless their mother. That's some group of people, isn't it? A generation where you have these younger people that are cursing their father and do not bless the mother that gave them birth. But we've got people like that today. There were people like that when I was growing up a long time ago. You know, that was a while back. I remember we had an individual on the football team when I was a young teenager, maybe even a little earlier. From time to time, I got to go to a football game. We never could really, I guess, afford to go to everyone every week, but I would go once in a while. And I remember we had a halfback. It was very fast. And he was my hero. I looked up to him, and it seemed like every time I gave him the ball, it looked like he scored a touchdown. You couldn't have thought more highly of somebody than what I thought of him until I found out that he hit his father and his mother, struck them. After that, I didn't care if I ever saw him on the field again. No, I wouldn't care. He would be part of this generation. In Proverbs chapter 1, 7 to 9, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The book of Proverbs is primarily written for young men. It certainly would be a tremendous blessing and does address young women. As a matter of fact, it addresses all age groups. But as you read the first chapter, it initially is to instruct those that are younger and younger men. And he says, if you despise wisdom and instruction, you're a fool. Pretty strong terminology. We have a lot of fools out there. They don't listen to their parents. Parents try to teach them, but they get in the wrong group, and they listen to their friends. It's sort of frightening to think that you could bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord and in one night go astray. And in one night partake of some type of dope and lose a life. Isn't that sad? That happens all the time. He said in verse 8, my son, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother. Actually, at the time that was written, the women were not as high on the scale as they are in the New Testament and as they are today. But he said, you listen to your mom and your dad. He said, they shall be an ornament of grace under thy head and chains about thy neck. You know, Olympics, I think, is coming up next year. And they put those medals on them and got those great big gold medals. I remember one time in a wrestling tournament. It was when my first year, I believe. Could have been the second, I don't. But I only took fourth place. That wasn't the best. They gave me the gold medal. I'm sitting there looking at that gold medal. If you don't know anything about it, the fourth, at least in this tournament, should have been bronze. And I'm looking at this medal and I'm thinking, this is not mine. So I asked a few people, I said, I'm not supposed to get the gold one, am I? I said, no. So I walk around, take it over to the other side, and the guy that whipped me sitting there, I said, I believe this is yours. And he gave me the bronze one. It was about the size, and this is fact. I wish I had it. It was about the size of a penny. You know, our young people here, they get awards. They get these big ribbons and big medals and these great big trophies. I'm happy for you. But that's what he's talking about, this chains about your neck. It's like a reward, like a trophy. The fact is, you will be greatly blessed. In Proverbs 30 and 17, in my judgment, you're hard-pressed to find a stronger figurative passage in the Bible than this passage. And what's so interesting is it deals with our subject and this first generation. Listen to this. The eye that mocketh his father and despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it. Now you let that sink in a little bit. I know it's not a good feeling, but you try to picture in your head a raven and taking an eye out of a human being and delivering it to a young eagle, and that eagle eating that eye. I don't know about you, but that's powerful. That's a figurative passage. That's what God thinks about it when someone mocks his father and despises to obey his mother. But we may have those here that will actually do that. Maybe we have some here that are doing that. I don't know. But you better listen. In Exodus 20 and 12, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. We all know that that's honor thy father and thy mother is one of the Ten Commandments under the old law. It's certainly taught in the New Testament, not because it's in the Ten Commandments, because that's always been true. There's never been a time since Adam and Eve in which individuals were not supposed to honor their father and their mother. And it has a promise about being blessed long time in the land. And you know, this comes up in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 to 3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Some of you have had children, they say, why do I have to do that? And sometimes the reply is, because I said so. That's good enough. Do what's right. Of course, we're not to do what's evil, but do what's right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment, with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. So God says this pleases God. And then Proverbs 23 and 22, hearken unto thy father that beget thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. And I've seen that. I remember one of our neighbors one time. He was a friend of mine. All our neighbors were friends back then. We didn't shoot each other or anything like that. We were all friends and close. I remember the younger one that was my friend. His mother was on the back porch. I was out there with my friend, and she told him to come in. And he said, old woman, I'm not going to come in. Smarted off to her. And she said, this is her exact words, when your father gets home, he's going to beat the back off you. And I knew the father, and I guarantee you he did. But those are rough boys. Rough boys. The second generation is found in Proverbs 30 and 12. There's a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness. I think out of all these, this one makes me the saddest. Because I think it's the most predominant generation that we see in our world today in reference to religion. That we have individuals going around and they're saying stuff like, you know, just receive Jesus in your heart. Or just say the sinner's prayer. And they visit people even at the deathbed and tell them, just accept Jesus. And they say all these things. Well, if you don't have God's word on it, you don't have it. You know, if you buy a house, you better have a deed. And if you're going to meet God someday, you're going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ, you better have it in the Bible. And you're not going to find what I just mentioned in the Bible. So they believe in their own eyes that they are washed from their filthiness, that they're pure, but they're not washed because they don't trust God. Not even concerned enough to read the Bible. Matter of fact, I know of so many cases people that I know of since we have been here, that when you show them in the Bible, or when they hear it in the Bible, and they hear a sermon on it from the Bible, it still doesn't mean anything. That one is very, very, very depressing to think about. In my judgment, we have actually a parable that Jesus gave that exactly fits this situation. Isn't that something? So here you got the Old Testament for our learning. You come to the New Testament, Luke chapter 18, begin with verse 9, going through 14. And he spake, this is Jesus, spake this parable unto certain, now listen, which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. If you are a child of God, you don't look down upon other people and despise other people, because we all sin and fail God. Even when your sins are washed away, as a child of God, you're going to sin sometime. But if you walk in the light, the blood will cleanse you. He says, two men went down into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. Publican was a tax collector. They worked with the Romans. And yes, I have no doubt some of them were pretty low. They could have you arrested. So people were afraid of them. The Jews hated the publicans. But one of Jesus' apostles, Matthew, was a publican. So you could be honest. And I have no doubt that some were. But they were really looked down upon. They are listed many times in the New Testament, even Jesus, publicans and sinners. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are. You got these extortioners out there, unjust, adulterers, even as this publican. I kind of wonder if that ever happens in the services, you know? Somebody's thinking they're sitting there and thinking, I come every week. I give a contribution every week. I do this and I do that. Now, what about this old sinner that came into the services today? He said, I fast twice in the week. Boy, that's something. I give tithes of all that I possess. He's been doing all the little things. I got every. That's the way the Pharisees were. Pharisees had these little things down, but they failed in the major things. The most important things they failed in, and then they brought in their doctrines and commandments of men. Jesus said that was vain worship, Matthew 15:9. The publican standing afar off, he didn't even try to get close. Why didn't he try to get closer? Because he felt so sinful. But he was sincere about it, and he was honest. He's afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven. That's how unworthy he felt. But smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Now, you know, the Lord said, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified, rather than the other, for everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased. That means he'll be brought down. He'll be brought low. But he said, he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. I've known a lot of brethren since the time I became a Christian. I've been a Christian now for over 55 years. And I can assure you that the greatest brethren are those that humble themselves in sight of the Lord. Now, this ideal of deceiving oneself, these people, if you want a description of it, this generation we're talking about, and they thought they were clean in God's sight, pure in God's sight, but they weren't. This generation was self-deceived. I'm going to use it in the singular. I notice in the King James it's in the plural, probably from the Hebrew. But James says in James 1:22, but be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. I don't know how much you ever thought about it, but Jesus warned about false prophets, Matthew 7:15 and following. 2 Peter 2, the whole chapter deals with it. You go home and read the one chapter of Jude and read about all those false prophets. We have them in the church today. But really what scares me, I got the Bible, I read the Bible. I believe I can identify a false prophet. I believe I've met some. But really scares me is if I deceive myself. How do you do that? By not doing what God said. If you don't open up the book, you'll deceive yourself. James 1:26-27. If any man among you seem to be religious and bridleth not his tongue. That's something there, isn't it? Bridle. You seem to be religious. I was a real religious person. But deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. It's been a good many years ago, but I've had children come up to me after the service, and I'd talk to them, and they'd tell me that their parent curses. Matter of fact, I know that there are members of the church that curse. I will give you a little story about a preacher, and this actually took place, and I heard the story this week. But basically, the preacher said to a group of young people, it said it's sort of, I'm going to say it as I understand it, sort of like a dial on the radio, all right? And you know, you can got a dial on the radio. Now, you know, in your car, it might be a button. But you got a dial on your radio, and anytime you want, you can turn that off. Everybody's done that, right? And my experience is that these brethren that curse, and I used to do it, these brethren that curse, that when they come in this church door, they turn it off. They don't turn that radio off. They're going to be just as sweet as could be. And then you find out later on, when they get in their own group or they get home, then here comes the mouth. Here comes the cursing. Now, if you can turn it off, you can turn it off permanently. You may slip up every once in a while, but you can turn it off. And I would encourage you to do that. James said, if you don't bridle your tongue. I have hopped on horses and mules with no bridle. And I guarantee you, it's not fun. I hopped on a mule one time. I coached it over to the wagon. I wasn't big enough to get up on the mule. I climbed up on that wagon, got some corn, gave it to the mule, hopped on the mule. He goes out in this low swampy places and just stands there. Water and mud. Oh, I couldn't get in the mood. I had to jump off that mule, go through the mud, ruin my shoes, tennis shoes, because I was too dumb to have a bridle on. Actually, my dad had not taught me how to bridle a horse, but he did teach me later on. So you're going to have to bridle the mouth. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this. Here's pure. This is just sort of a summary, but it has to do with what James said in verse 22 of being doers of the word. He says to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. That means to help them in any way you can. God loves the fatherless and he loves the widows. If you're doing things along that line, you're doing good. And on a regular basis, we support the orphan home. The orphan's home here. You can't get to something better than that. And to keep himself unspotted from the world. That can be done. Or James wouldn't have said we could do it. We can keep ourselves unspotted from the world. Well, in Proverbs 14 and 12, on along this self-deception, you've heard it. Most of us have heard this a lot. There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Looks like this is the right way. How many of you have gotten in a car at day or at nighttime with me, especially nighttime? In the day, I can go about everywhere with the sun, but nighttime, if I'm on my foot, I could go by the stars, but I can't do that driving down the highway. You ever been lost, turned around? When our son was up at Duke, I came home one weekend here to preach. It's where we had Brother Tom. And I've got a thing there in the car, and you know, it gives you the map. And I didn't know how to use that properly. I think it somehow wasn't done. I messed up somehow. And I was going by my memory, and I got off the road. And I'll tell you, I was already tired, and I was 2 hours late coming home. 2 hours late. If you know anything about where Duke is, I ended up going to Roanoke, Virginia. Okay? The only good thing about it was that I was out on the road on the interstate and nobody really around. And you've seen these meteors that come down that people talk about. After I was 2 hours late and going the wrong way, I saw a meteor come right down in front of me. I thought I would hear an explosion. I was, you know, going 70 miles an hour. Probably a little at night, maybe 72 or whatever. I'm going down the road, and I tried to look back. I didn't see anything. But what would be the odds of getting lost? But I didn't know where I was going. And you need to know where you're going. You need to stick with the Bible. Jesus said, he that believeth and baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned. I don't think that's any more difficult than the command that was given unto Naaman in 2 Kings chapter 5. You go to the Jordan River and you wash 7 times and you'll come and you'll be well. 7 times to be healed. When he didn't do it at first. He's stubborn like a lot of people today. On the judgment day, if you believe you've been baptized and you can add repentance and you're not ashamed to confess Christ, you walk in the light, you don't have anything to worry about. You won't have to have somebody give you last-minute instructions. The third generation. chapter 30 and verse 13. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. Now this is, do you not see a haughty and arrogant generation? I'll tell you what, if you watch the television, you do, huh? It's kind of sickening. I'm not going to name all the specifics, but I believe I see on every single week, I see individuals on there, and I see they're haughty. They're not believing the law. They're not believing our Constitution. And most of them don't believe in right, don't believe in wrong, and it doesn't bother them to lie. If I'm missing something, you talk to me afterwards. I'd like to be corrected, okay? So here you have this generation, and their eyes are lofty. But the poor publican, he wouldn't even lift up his eyes to heaven. Proverbs 8 and 13, the fear of the Lord. What does it mean to reverence God? What does it mean to fear God? You've got to hate certain things. He said is to hate evil, pride, and arrogancy, and the evil way, and the froward mouth do I hate. Froward mouth is like a twisted, perverse mouth. Very often you can probably put the word stubborn in there. You know, God hates that. He wants the people to be saved. I want people to be saved. The man that performed our wedding ceremony, Richard L. Curry, one of the instructors, the Memphis School of Preaching, I can't tell you how many times I heard him say this, so I'm going to pass it on to you. You tell me what a man hates, and I'll tell you what a man loves. If you don't hate sin, you better wake up. If you don't love the Lord, you better wake up and do something about it. Well, Proverbs 15 and 33, the fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom. This wisdom instructs us to have a fearful, trembling reverence for God. And he said, and before honor is humility. So true honor comes by being humble. I think that's hard sometimes. That's a challenge. Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's the first sentence out of the greatest sermon, far as I'm concerned, ever been preached. The Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit. And the ideal is poor like a beggar. Well, that's something if you had to beg, isn't it? Pretty lowly spirit. In Isaiah 66, 1 and 2, thus saith the Lord, heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house ye build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? For all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord, but to this man will I look. Even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit and trembleth at my word. I believe we're living in a nation that you're getting more. I can't tell you the proportion. You're getting more and more people that have no knowledge of the Bible, don't care to have knowledge of the Bible, and they do not tremble at the word of God. How sad it's going to be on that final day. Tonight, Lord willing, we're studying the as a thief in the night. When the Lord comes back, this is the time to correct yourself. This is the time to come to the Lord. This is the time to be cleansed by His blood. The fourth generation. Fourth generation, Proverbs 30 and 14. Now listen to this. This is obviously highly figurative. Sometimes I've had people ask me, do you believe the Bible is figurative or literal? That tells me they've never even read the Bible. You tell me, I'm the bread of life. Is that figurative or literal? I got flour at the house. I got bread at the house. Is that a figure of speech? Yes. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and their jaw teeth as knives to devour the poor off the earth and the needy from among men. We live in a free society. We have what is known as a republic. Our founders knew about Rome. Rome for the longest time, really up till about Julius Caesar and it wasn't his actual son, but Augustus. But up until that time, they had a republic. And they had a Senate like we have a Senate. And when our founders were established in our country, when our founders were established in our country, they studied that. They came up with the Senate, so they kind of equalized that every state, no matter how small, is going to have the same number of senators. But we have those that do not respect the poor and the needy. And that's a greedy and uncompassionate generation. This is just my opinion. I don't mind telling you every time. Once in a while I'll say this is my judgment, but I think it's based on the Bible. We should pray to be generous, because it's easy to be covetous. Proverbs 14 and 21. He that despiseth his neighbor sinneth, but he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. Isn't that so? You want to be happy? Help the poor. In Proverbs 14 and 31. He that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker, but he that honoreth him hath mercy on the poor. The Bible teaches to help the poor and to help the needy. The Bible also teaches in Thessalonians that if any man work, neither should he eat. And we're kind of getting back to that. That's a sad situation, brethren, but we should look into it. In Proverbs 17 and 5, whoso mocketh the poor reproacheth his maker. Think about it. Your maker, your creator. You're not just mocking the poor, you're mocking God. Proverbs 19 and 17. This is one of my favorite scriptures. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord. And he which hath given, and that which he hath given, will he pay him again. Now you think about that. How many of you have gotten a loan from the bank? Huh? You go get money, you get money from the bank. But he says, now, if you help the poor, it's like you're lending. You're lending to the Lord. And he said, the Lord will take care of it. Well, how much should I give? Well, I think the Lord will handle it. You'll have to make that decision. I can just tell you from experience, you can't outgive God. You can't outgive the Lord. He'll take care of you. And then Proverbs 21 and 13, whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. He that hath a bountiful eye, Proverbs 22:9, shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor. Proverbs 22 and 22, rob not the poor, because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted at the gate. And this one is kind of unusual wording. Charlotte and I talked about this verse. As a roaring lion and a raging bear. That's not raging, ranging bear. So is a wicked ruler over poor people. You know what a ranging bear is? Well, you all heard about the open range, right? A ranging bear is a bear. He's out there free on his own, doing about everything he wants. He's, I would call it, just roaming about. Just roaming about. And he says that that's a wicked ruler that presides over poor people. And we have rulers like that in our world today. We should be thankful for the country we have. And for the blessings we've had, I've noticed in both prayers, and this is almost always, if not always, we think about the blessings God has given unto us. You're born in the United States of America. You're a citizen in this country. Surely you know how blessed you are. I think about all that blood. They're talking about these. Really, it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, Russians and Ukrainians, that have died. You think about how sad that is. There's so many, and so many have died for us to be here this morning and suffered. Some of them didn't die. Some of them lost their hands, their feet, their legs. I will tell you this and we'll end it. When I was a boy, there was a man. And my dad would pick him up and give him a ride from time to time. And my mother would speak to my dad and say, "Billy, don't bring him home here. He's not right." My dad was in the war, and he would laugh, and he would say, "You don't have to worry about that." He said, "He's just shell-shocked." Now, I forgot his name at first, but they called him Whistle. He was a big man. And sure enough, one day, he took the lives of his whole family, just like my mom felt like that he might do. That's so sad, that he had to go to war, and he came back in that condition. So we thank God for these people that have given us our freedoms, and God for blessing us. And now you have the freedom to become a Christian this morning. We've talked about it. How many times have you heard it? If you're an erring child of God, you can come back home too, as we stand and as we sing.